It's the end of an era for downtown's First Baptist Church. Lawyers for Duval County Schools say they'll fight to get a referendum on the ballot. And Tropical Storm Umberto is headed our way. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good Friday morning and live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, it's all the biggest stories of the week with our Friday roundtable. You can join us. Give us a call right now. The number's 549-2937. Then later, a brand new theater company takes the stage in Nassau County. We'll tell you about that, too. All of that coming up, but first, it's Friday. Here to discuss a busy week in the news, we welcome Mike Mendenhall of the Jax Daily Record. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Giorgio Valentino is here, editor at Folio Weekly.
Good morning.
Good morning, and blogger and regular contributor, Fred Matthews. Hey, Fred.
Good morning, Melissa.
Guys, it's so good to have you here. Lots to get into from the week. Everything from a new tropical storm headed our way, which is the last thing any of us want to hear, to a really big headline about the First Baptist Church announcing it's selling off most of its downtown property. We'll get to that in a moment and what it means for the city. But we're going to begin with another big story for downtown. Right now, if you've driven down Bay Street, you've noticed that the site of the former Duval County Courthouse and the City Hall Annex are just green lawn space, right? And there's been some criticism about all of the demolition of downtown buildings, including the one that is slated to bring down the Jacksonville Landing. It's even sparked a satirical Twitter account called Lenny's Lawn that mocks Mayor Lenny Curry's downtown priorities and all of the open space we're seeing around the urban core. But now we are hearing of a big deal for those courthouse and annex sites. A new development called the Ford on Bay is being considered by the Downtown Investment Authority. It could be mixed use with office space, open space, and a hotel. We're going to begin the hour with a closer look as Mike Mendenhall of the Daily Record, who broke the story, fills us in. And as we talk about this and the First Baptist Church news, which we'll get to in a moment, call us up at 549-2937. Join the conversation. Okay, Mike, so this is going to be called the Ford on Bay. What is it?
So essentially, this is going to be, I mean, it's going to be a new look for the downtown skyline in a lot of ways. The DIA is going to be putting out an RFP, request for proposal, sometime next month. And one of the big pushes and actually the one of the biggest I've never seen anything that's had this much restriction as far as usage goes is retail. They're really going to be pushing ground floor retail with this project.
There's stores on Bay Street,
stores, restaurants, pubs, and all that kind of stuff. So 80% of the ground floor retail that's going to go into this development will 80% of the space will have to be retail, and that's going to be a stipulation for any proposal that the DIA
can makes. Retail work in the urban core in that high density capacity, Giorgio. I mean, we're seeing the Jacksonville Landing coming down. And the argument there was, look, it's not working. People aren't going to those stores.
Yeah, downtown definitely has a density problem. And there's certain hours where it's a ghost town. There's many hours where it's a ghost town. I would start by the obvious. It's a really dumb name.
Ford on Bay?
It's a terribly ridiculous name.
Yeah, what is it? Does that refer to the city's old name, Cowford? Because cows came across at the narrowest point in the St. John's River.
It was called a Ford.
The Ford. Yeah, the Cowford.
which is also
Fred,
more.
Fred, you're not old enough to remember those days, but some people out there might
I'm a,
be old
I'm
enough.
A history buff, and that's what it did. But that's the problem. Nobody's going to know what it refers to.
Yeah.
That's the problem. I think Giorgio's hit it on the head. I mean, it's an interesting name, but what?
You know, Ford on Bay.
It's one of these things that's okay. Technically accurate, but just all wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, even Bay, if you think about it, on Bay, it's on Bay Street, but it's on a river. Is that, I mean, if people
it's
didn't know.
It's a little confusing for people. Yeah. Is it official that that's the name of the project?
That is official. That's actually what the marketing material that the DIA commissioned has titled it. They did a big marketing packet that was released with this information yesterday. And there was one line in the marketing information explaining the history behind the Ford on Bay name.
Okay. And so the Downtown Investment Authority will sign off on this, presumably part of their overall priority to get a lot of new projects going, mixed use projects going downtown. This is right down the street from Shad Khan's proposed Lot J development. How will it factor in? How will this be integrated in with those plans?
Well, I think you're going to see integration partially just in the theme of Bay Street. They're really looking for it to be an entertainment kind of pedestrian friendly area. But then also too, when the JTA gets their automated vehicle system, if they get their automated vehicle system up and running, like that'll connect all of that area as well.
Okay. You know, it's interesting when you drive around downtown and you hear both the mayor, the Downtown Investment Authority, and others say, we're on the cusp of something really big. What do you guys think?
Well, we may be. Let's see. I think in particular, you mentioned the location here. It's part of that eastward pull towards the sports complex.
Towards the sports complex.
Yeah. But although it is closer to the for real downtown than it is to the sports complex. But it is part of that drift, and when we discuss what's going on with the church, also that it makes all of that real downtown development all the more difficult because that we don't have the base to fill such a large area, and if you're just kind of spreading it out, it's never going to work.
And let's get to the other big news of the week. The Downtown Investment Authority is going to have a lot on its plate when things get moving on the sale of most of the downtown First Baptist Church. As people who followed this through the years know, the church owns nearly 10 square blocks of downtown Jacksonville. But they have struggled financially and are losing attendance. So First Baptist is selling off most of their property, which includes several large parking garages, and they're going to confine their church to just one block. We're going now to look into what this means for Jacksonville, and we'll go to your calls in a moment. What do you think should be done with the former First Baptist Church property as it goes on the auction block? It's 549-2937. Fred Matthews, everything from a new college campus to a medical hub or housing has been brought up as replacements for the First Baptist Church footprint. Critics of the church have said for many years that it has hindered downtown development as well. So is this an opportunity for Jacksonville?
It's an opportunity for Jacksonville, but more importantly, it's an opportunity for the members and leadership of First Baptist Church. Look, this has been the imprint of downtown Jacksonville for many, many years, decades. And for those of us who've been here a long time, we can see, remember those, it was one of the first local churches to be on television. We can see those grainy black and white pictures at 11 o'clock every Sunday morning with Homer Lindsay Sr. holding court there. And,
the former pastor,
and then his son took over, and the successive pastors have simply tried to hold things together as the political and religious landscape has changed. Now, the thing about this is that this could be the church for those who stay downtown. Okay, for those Baptists who stay downtown, it has been grown more diverse than ever. There was a time when, you know, black folks said you could join Baptist Church, but you couldn't have your funeral there because the pastors wouldn't serve over your funeral. Well, all that's changed now. And it's a diverse population with a progressive pastor. And interesting enough, although religion is a big deal, business played into this decision. Business, big time business. And to put this out in front of the congregation, as Pastor Lambert did, was a bold move, but it was necessary, and he didn't receive any opposition.
The congregation approved the plan to take out a $30 million loan to consolidate their property down to one block. So as the church does that, as Fred pointed out, Mike and Giorgio, attendance has plummeted. There's a ton of deferred maintenance on all this property, 10 city blocks. It's really extraordinary when you look at a map showing how much property this church owns. And so what type of opportunity are downtown development officials and people in the private commercial real estate industry saying to you about where they see this going?
Well, you mentioned that they own 10 city blocks and they're selling off 9 of it, but 6 of those blocks are actually connected. There's 6 city blocks that are contiguous, and that's really the piece that a lot of these developers are and brokers are really interested in, because You brought up the medical campus. Like any type of large development like that's going to need that kind of contiguous space to operate. And also, too, it'd be a good opportunity for multifamily development, apartment, affordable or workforce housing, which is still, even though it's getting a push downtown, is still sorely needed.
And Giorgio, this is a big cultural shift for the city as well. In a city which, late to the game, finally did update its human rights ordinance to extend workplace and public accommodation protections to LGBTQ citizens, a city that is clamoring for more bars and restaurants downtown. This church has been perceived through the years as hindering that kind of development. There have even been rumors that they sit on liquor licenses to prevent more of these establishments from opening up downtown. So this is a sea change for people who want the culture of the urban core to move forward.
Yeah, everything I've heard about this organization has been anachronistic and bizarre and almost culty. And even the way that this announcement has gone down to go from 10 blocks to one, there's no managed decline. I mean, churches are strange organizations. They just kind of, there's no transparency, right, until everything falls apart. It seems like that's where they're at. And there could have been some more forward thinking in years past. Once that decline in attendance was registered, that, you know, this could have already been a more managed process. Now it seems like it's crashing out. It's a big opportunity for development. But just the scope of what's going to become available is going to invite big players. And that means it's going to be incentives and all that.
Well, it fell to this young pastor to deal with it. The last three saw the decline, which has been substantial over the last 20 years. They saw the decline, but it takes you who's going to make that proposal to take out a loan? First of all, these organizations don't like taking out loans. They don't like owing anybody. And they've always been able to do everything they wanted from within the membership, because they had at one point 30,000 members, 10,000 attending.
And they would tithe 10% of their income to the church.
Actual tithing.
That has declined significantly.
Yeah. All that's
not
changed.
Just for this church, but for
many of them. So this guy had to make a decision along with the board. That's essentially why they brought him in, to look at what's going to be, what he has to do. And to, if you haven't seen the old church, which is now going to be the new church again.
Right. It's about a 100-year-old stone building.
Drive by there.
Beautiful old church behind Jacksonville City Hall.
Yep.
That will now be the centerpiece.
And you mentioned the kind of urgency by the church. This $30 million loan, I mean, that's what it's for. It's to give them some more time to sell off this property so they don't have to, you know, sell it quickly to finance their new endeavor. And the other, and this is a big shift for their ministry too, because one of the things that the pastor is really going to be pushing is expansion out of downtown Jacksonville and eventually opening up satellite locations.
Now, Nocatee is already up and open, and the membership there has been increasing steadily. With the residency in Nocatee, that's one of the growing parts of their ministry. So that's going to stay. But business-wise, this is a business decision that they really don't have very much choice in. What's going to be interesting is what's going to take place in that huge auditorium that they have down there. That auditorium is something else. You can have some great concerts there.
Okay, let's go to your calls. It's 549-2937. It's our Friday Media Roundtable as we talk about the biggest stories of the week. What are your thoughts about the big downtown news this week? A new development coming up at the site of the former old courthouse on Bay Street on the river. It's called the Fort on Bay. Mixed reviews on that title. And the other big story, First Baptist Church is vacating downtown, sort of, selling off most of its downtown property. What do you think should be done with those blocks? 549-2937. Stephen is in St. John's County. Hi, Stephen. Good morning.
Hello, how you doing?
Good. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. My question or comment was about, I think one of you mentioned about financial transparency, and that's something that has not been seen here. And like you said, until it falls apart. So it would be nice to see, hey, documented over the years, the debt. So that way everyone knows what's going on here, instead of saying, hey, let's take a loan out to pay off debt, when you could just steadily, you know, slowly sell off property one by one, start with the biggest and going to the smallest if you have to. They also, I believe, renovated one of their auditoriums. So why not hold on to that piece of property that you just invested so much money in?
Yeah, thanks for that. And there's been some criticism about how this has played out, as you pointed out, Giorgio. Keep in mind, all of these prime downtown city blocks are tax exempt.
Yeah, and I think that, that points to some of the problems with churches as businesses, because they have so many kind of special dispensations that, yes, it's a business, but it's also a business like no other.
Yeah, that's right. You don't have to pay taxes on that property. The parking garages have been a source of revenue, huge parking garages. But at the same time, it's expensive to maintain that much acreage and that much property. A lot of deferred maintenance, the costs mount over time. We'll get to how that's affecting the school system in a moment. But Mike, go ahead.
Yeah, $37 million in deferred maintenance. So, and that's another part of the issue. And when we're talking about selling these properties, they don't know exactly until they do a full analysis how many of these buildings will actually be able to stay and what will need to be demolished. And that's going to be key when they decide how much to actually put it on the market for.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's quite an undertaking, and it's quite a vast business. I mean, when you go to these churches today, and particularly the First Baptist, again, you go there, it's Sunday morning. First of all, the Thursday night service is huge with a lot of folks there. You have to beg for parking. You need that thing. And then when you go back on Sunday, it's the same thing. The security that they have around there, it's like going into a secret service, because everybody's wearing headsets and microphones.
You think it's the president
when
here?
You come in there.
Yeah.
It's something else. And, it took, it took some pre-planning. They're going to have to do this and move this property off, because they simply can't sustain it. Financially, they just don't have the money. And it harkens back to two religious shows that are on the air right now, one on HBO called The Gemstones, and the other on the Oprah network called Greenleaf.
Right.
If you want to get an idea of how big-time churches operates.
Watch those shows.
Watch those two shows.
Here's an email from Bill in Springfield. Whatever development happens at the First Baptist Church property needs to better connect downtown and Springfield. The FBC properties have served largely as an inactive void between these two emerging areas, which is a shame. You can easily walk or bike to and from Springfield to downtown and vice versa. So this is an opportunity then to activate that whole swath that is the link between downtown and Springfield. What about that?
I spoke with a developer who owns a lot of residential properties in Springfield, and he's very happy to know that this is going to be redeveloped. He considers this the gateway to the Springfield neighborhood, and so there's definitely that opportunity there. Going back to the parking too, the parking structure that's going to be on the single block that they're going to be redeveloping, it is nowhere near close to being able to support the 3,200 members they have every Sunday.
549-2937. John is on the south side. Hi, John. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. I was just liking to say that as far as the development that they want to do on Bay Street, I can see it being pretty good with the Shah Khan project that's going on. So we'll be basically changing the culture downtown, because if people remember, the culture downtown was changed by the church when they bought up all of that property. So being that they're now going to sell that property, we can really, really start to want to rehab and develop that downtown area, Davis Street, Jefferson Street, Ashley Street. We'll be able to really put some economics in that area for the historical people that have lived there. And I think it'll be good. I think it'll be really good if the church starts to sell off that property. All right. Thank you.
Thanks, John. Yeah, I mean, this news has been greeted positively by most people that have followed it. Here's a tweet from Sierra. I live in the dead area between downtown and Springfield, formerly known as La Villa. I am thrilled that the church will be leaving and maybe this area can come back to life. Emails from listeners, too. You mentioned the liquor licenses issue. I received a DM about this last night from someone as well on Twitter saying, I personally know of, let me find it here. here, let me find it. I've heard this rumor for years, and I personally know the owners of a pub in downtown that could not get a liquor license because it the $100,000 license was being held by the First Baptist Church. This is a rumor that has floated around for many years. It's been denied. Mm. But what about that?
As far as the history goes, I'm unclear on that, but I will say I spoke with the pastor this week, I asked him specifically, will there be conditions for sale? Will the church try to put conditions on what can go on the property? And he told me that they were interested in any and all offers. So given the situation that they're in, there might be some leverage from the developers who are interested in the property.
Right. If say a developer wanted to get a hold of a liquor license that presumably has been sat on, could that be part of the leverage? Yeah. That's been talked about for years in this community, but I've never seen any confirmation of it. So I'd be interested to hear about anyone that has had a personal experience with that. Rick is on the South Side. Hi, Rick. Good morning.
Yes. Good morning, Ms. Melissa. One of the things that I notice about the First Baptist Church that I really enjoy, and I hear people comment about this morning, that are holding a liquor license. Everybody don't want to be around where people drink all day, you know. And so that was one of the good things that I enjoy. I could say I enjoyed about it that they didn't. People couldn't drink certain times of the day downtown. So that's one of the things I'm going to miss that part. Thanks,
Rick. You know, and I don't think it had to do so much with times of the day rather than there were two issues. One, you couldn't set up an establishment that sold alcohol within 1,500 feet of the church property, and that includes the parking lots. So that was seen as a hindrance to downtown nightlife and vibrancy. The other perception is that church officials had bought up several liquor licenses, which are about $100,000 each, and just held on to them to prevent other potential business owners from getting a hold of them, which would prevent some establishments from selling hard liquor.
Yeah, and whatever you think of the demon alcohol, it still depresses the economy. I mean, one way or another.
Okay. It's 549-2937. As we talk about the biggest stories of the week here on the show, let's move on and talk about the deferred maintenance plaguing our local school system. The Duval County Public School Board has hired a legal dream team in its fight to get a sales tax referendum before local voters. Earlier this week, we spoke with all three lawyers, Hank Cox, Scott Cairns, and Audrey Moran, about their push to get the matter on the ballot. Here's Moran.
We believe this issue is critical for the future of public education in Duval County. The school system is desperate for better infrastructure to house and educate our children in this community. And all that's being asked at this point is let the voters vote. The voters have been blocked from voting. We believe that was improper and illegal, and we want to get this issue to the voters as quickly as possible.
Strong words from Moran, essentially accusing the Jacksonville City Council and the city's Office of General Counsel of acting illegally to withdraw a measure that would put this matter before the voters in 2019. Hank Cox, former president of the Florida Bar, Scott Cairns, a super lawyer from McGuire Woods, and Moran, can they successfully get this before a judge quickly enough that they can achieve their goal of getting this referendum before the voters? This is really becoming a nasty legal fight now. And it was eye-opening, to say the least, to hear these attorneys speak in this manner. Thoughts?
Yes, I think it can be done. It's got to be done in 2019, and I think it can be done in December. I appreciated their clarity. I wish we had heard something like that earlier, because as they pointed out on the air, this is not about the actual details of the policy. This is simply about the principle of letting people vote on it. And they declined to discuss any details except let the people vote on it.
Yeah, it's 549-2937 to join us. And the fight is over whether how to get this matter before all of you, the voters, so that you could vote it up or down. The Duval County School Board wants to raise nearly $2 billion in a half-cent sales tax that would be levied over 15 years, and it would pay for, once again, deferred maintenance on some of the oldest school buildings in Florida. The reason this has been so difficult is because a majority of the Jacksonville City Council, the mayor, and his city attorney, Jason Gabriel, have expressed a strong preference for at least $150 million of that pot of money or more to go toward charter schools in this county. The Duval County School Board has a different way of funding the money than the charter school proponents would like to see. So it's a battle over who gets the money, how the money is apportioned between traditional public schools and charter schools. We've talked about this on the show before, Fred. Some of the oldest and most dilapidated schools in Duval are in the city center, the northwest side. Some are nearly 100 years old. The Duval County School Board says this is a need-based referendum, that the older, more dilapidated buildings would get fixed up first. That's been controversial as well. So this is, there are some schisms here between public school and charter school proponents, and some on the fight, including Warren Jones, former city council member, now a school board member, have said that there is a strong element of racism in this fight as well. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, you had Rory Diamond on the air, I think, earlier this week. He said, poo-poo to any racial issue. Of course not. We don't have that problem. And Rory is consistent with those city council members who have no political fear on this issue because their constituents could care less about the school system. And majority of the city council members don't have there's no political consequences for them at this time, especially the new ones who just got on, because they've got 3 years to let this die down. The problem with going to a legal fight is obvious. Number one, this super legal team has got to get if I'm not mistaken, and lawyers can correct me on this, but they've got to get a client that will stand in court to give them standing before whatever judge they choose, they shop around, that will hear this case and do it. The school board can't get around having Jason Gabriel represent them because he is it, because that's the way our Constitution is set up. They can't get an outside
city
charter set up. They can't get around Jason Gabriel. The mayor could care less because he's already decided he doesn't have to do anything. As long as the city council doesn't send him anything, he doesn't have to do anything. The city council leadership says the same thing that they say in Congress. Why should we send up legislation that the mayor's going to veto? Why should we send up legislation that the president's going to veto? And so what we're faced with here is that nothing is going to come of this, unfortunately, because of the timeline this year. And the school board is left with only one recourse, and that is to basically agree to having it on the ballot in 2020 and let that be it. Now, if the city council...
And let me just interject the caveat that Scott Cairns, one of the super lawyers who was here the other day, said that they still think there's a window to get this on a mail-in ballot this year.
Can't happen.
That said, I hear your point that the window is rapidly closing. But it was interesting to hear the urgency in their voices saying how quickly they intend to move to get this before a judge.
They got
to
find a judge.
Mike.
Well, and there's still an appetite from at least one city council member, Matt Carlucci, to try to broker some type of a deal, bring Jason Gabriel back to the table. But that window could be rapidly closing. I mean, and even if they do, they withdrew the bill from city council. So if they do, reintroduce it, it has to go all the way back through the committee process, which will make it even less likely that it could get on the ballot or the mail-in ballot in December.
Giorgio.
I think it's still possible, and I'm hoping that it's going to happen in 2019. The problem, the reason why everyone's saying 2019 is because once we hit 2020, there's going to be all kinds of complications. It won't be able to be in the spring, so then you're pushing it back another 6 months to November, and then these schools, they need attention immediately. There's also the fact that all of the sausage making that's going to go on between now and then, November 2020. So all of it's going to get diluted. There's going to be handouts for all the special interests, et cetera, et cetera. So the best thing to do is get it taken care of early. And that's why City Hall got out in front of it, because they knew, first of all, it was a popular issue, that if it went to a vote, people were going to go for it. And they knew that it would reassert the independence of the school board, which is not what City Hall wants. So for various reasons, they squashed it from the beginning.
Barry on the west side. Hi, Barry. Good morning.
Hi, Melissa. You know, we've had this question about where to put the JEA. It just seems like Providence that the space that the First Baptist is letting go is probably big enough to house the JEA.
The JEA. Well, you know what, though? They've already identified, that's another kettle of fish, Barry. They've already identified a new downtown headquarters site, which is not
That's mm-hmm. gold-plated land. That's for new business, not old business.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that because we've been talking about JEA too. I didn't have it slated to talk about this week, but it is interesting to note how JEA is building an expensive new headquarters. At the same time, they're talking about selling off. That's another issue that has caught controversy.
Or laying off 500 guys.
And laying off workers too. Yeah. Thank you for that, Barry. Yeah.
Yeah. To the caller's question, leaders at JEA have kind of alluded to the fact that if the privatization or sale of JEA doesn't move forward, that headquarters could probably also not happen. There's out clauses in all of the contracts with the developer and JEA and the city as well to ensure that there's a possibility that it couldn't happen.
Dale is calling from the town center area. Hey, Dale, what are your thoughts? Good morning.
Good morning. Once again, here we are having a conversation in regards to the will of the few against the will of the many. This is the United States of America the last time I checked. From what my understanding is, it is overall through all the polls that people want to vote on the referendum for the schools. I mean, when are the people of the county and of Duval and the city of Jacksonville, which is one, going to say, you know what, enough is enough is enough. These people that are in power here, they ride roughshod, as my grandmother used to say, over the will of the voting public of this county and this city. And it is ridiculous that we should even be having a conversation. JEA sale. Everything that I've read or heard or seen, no matter what side you were coming from, has said the public does not want to sell JEA. So what do? They come up with these lies, because this is what these are, lies. Oh, JEA is in this type of financial condition. People are going to lose their jobs. Okay, you have another situation with the school board sales tax. People say, we want to vote on that. We want to fund the school. These are the people speaking. They say, oh, well, you got to fund the charter schools. Why would I, as a taxpayer, want to fund charter schools, which are privately held institutions, a business? What am I going to do putting my tax money into a situation like that? That makes absolutely no sense. Not just to say, also, from a situation that I ran into within my own family, where we had a child that was going to one of these supposed charter schools. The parent decided, okay, this isn't a good fit. We're going to go back over into the school, into the public school system. It took money in order for them to even get the transcripts. When they went to the Duval County School Board building and said, hey, listen, we're trying to re-enroll our child back into the school, to the public school system here, they were told by the people at the, and rightly so, we have no jurisdiction over the charter school.
Right, Dale. So yeah, I get all of your points, and I hear the frustration in your voice.
Why would you want to pay that?
Yeah, I hear you. Thank you, Dale. Okay, so that's Dale at Town Center speaking for the voters out there who are angry about all of these developments happening all at the same time, the push to privatize JEA, the foot dragging on the sales tax referendum, which, as you pointed out, Giorgio, one poll on that showed it has strong majority support. And so for at least some constituents out there, there is a lot of anger and frustration that the will of the voters on these big issues affecting the future of this city is, in their minds anyway, being thwarted by our elected representatives, that they are not listening to their constituents. Thoughts?
Yeah, in some cases, it's not just dishonesty, broken promises, that's par for the course in politics. But I think we have an openly corrupt administration in Jacksonville. And I tell folks, you know, out of town, out of the country, what I deal with at work on a daily basis, the stories we're covering, and it's just they don't believe me. I mean, is this happening in the 21st century in an American city? Yes, it is.
Yeah, I mean, there's just no political consequences that many members on the city council fear at this point. Now, the JEA is a situation that's a little different in that those persons on the board of the JEA are basically controlled by the mayor directly, and they're choosing to make this decision. They don't have to take any public input. Yeah, they have a public input session at the board meeting, if you can remember to attend it and get up the elevator and get there, but they don't have to take anything from the public. They
heard quite a bit from the public at that city council meeting a couple of weeks ago, Mike. I believe you were there. The public was literally cleared from a public council meeting. Extraordinary.
Yeah, and they only let media and people directly involved in the situation back into the room. I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah, I mean, David Bauerlein of the Times Union, the most mild-mannered, diplomatic, even-keeled person you will ever talk to ever, said on this program, "I've never seen anything like this. It was unbelievable." So these are extraordinary times in this city, and there is a lot of anger and frustration. We're getting calls about it. Linda is in Deerwood. Hi, Linda.
Hey, how are you? I heard Fred Matthews indicate that we don't have a plaintiff because the school board doesn't have standing. So citizenry-wise, I certainly would be happy to talk to the attorneys. We can, you know, I'll be happy to be the plaintiff because we need to deal with this. And we need to, because nobody, power only recognizes power. That's a power team. If they need a plaintiff, Linda from Deerwood calling Audrey Moran. Let's get it done. We don't have time to waste with this administration because we've got like 3 more years. God knows what will happen. Let's do it.
Well, Linda, thanks for that. Now, what she's saying is that a parent or a child should serve as the lead plaintiff in suing over this matter. And I'm not an attorney.
Yeah.
That I've heard this come up a few times. I don't know if this team of attorneys sees that as a correct legal strategy, Linda, or not. But certainly a number of citizens have expressed the desire to do this.
Well, the thing is, and that's true, and we, you know, none of us attorneys, so we'll leave it to them. But the key here is still the same thing. What the school board is asking the city council to do is simply be a pass-through for what they've already decided to do. And the city council is saying, look, we could do that, but we are not going to do that. And the legal, the dancing on the head of the legal pin is, can a court force them to not do their due diligence? Can a court force the city council not to do due diligence, as they say they're doing, and simply put this on the ballot? That's the legal question that's at the core of this. And how can you tell the city council they can't do due diligence?
And well, I think it also goes to the general counsel who came out first against the referendum. And there's a legal argument that's pretty sound that was a conflict of interest because the general counsel represents the mayor and the school board. So, and he gave preferential treatment to the mayor's position, or what is quite obviously the mayor's position without necessarily saying it.
Linda in Lakeshore. Hello, Linda. Another Linda. Good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to make some comments. I'm a long time. I went to all my grade school and high school here in Jacksonville. I graduated when the schools were disaccredited. Of course, I went to Lee, so I got a great education. But what the county seems to always forget is the education portion of their governing. And we should not be spending money on charter schools. That is something we need to be investing in, what the county owns. The county and the mayor seem to have forgotten that. I mean, this business of selling JEA, who in the world thought of that?
Thanks, Linda. Yeah, those are the two big controversies, and you hit on both. Thank you for that. Okay, so we've heard from everybody out there on these two big matters of the era, and we're going to keep covering both of them. But first, before we go to break, I want to make note of some bad news. Tropical storm Umberto is headed our way. A tropical storm watch has been issued for the Florida East Coast. Not good, especially for the Bahamas, still reeling in the aftermath of Hurricane Dorian. Keep your eye on the tropics this weekend. Guys, let's just hope we get a little rain. Please. You know, we don't need any more storms, do we, Florida? But definitely listen to 89.9 and the Florida Public Radio Emergency Network. We'll be covering it all weekend. All right. Finally, it's our look at the strange, bizarre, and just plain ridiculous from the week. We've got two for you today, guys. Luckily, there is never a shortage of material in this state. Here it is for you right now, only in Florida. Only in Florida would a porn company try to buy the naming rights to an arena. Can you imagine if this happened in Jacksonville? No, this was in Miami, because American Airlines is soon out as title sponsor of the arena that's home to the Miami Heat. A local porn company wants to step in and take the naming rights. Yes, Bang Bros announced Thursday it had submitted a $10 million bid to replace American as title sponsor of the South Florida County-owned arena. No comment from Miami-Dade County officials, Giorgio. You used to live there.
Why are you looking at me, Bruce?
That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money, man.
Bang Bros Arena, I just don't think it's going to make it, but kind of fun to think about. Okay, not only in Florida, but all over the world, it is Friday the 13th today. Do you feel a little strange? Do things feel a little off, perhaps, maybe today?
Yeah.
It kind of does for me, too. Yeah. Well, it's Friday the 13th, but we also want to make note of a rare harvest moon. What better way to ring in the spirit of the fall season than with a full moon happening tonight, this Friday the 13th? Now, although the official first day of fall isn't until September 23rd, take note, tonight a rare harvest moon will appear across the U.S. and into the early morning hours of Saturday. According to the Old Farmer's Almanac, the harvest moon is a full moon that appears nearest to the start of the fall equinox. Occasionally it can happen in October, but tonight's the night to watch and look at the harvest moon. Go outside and check it out tonight. It's going to be beautiful. So we wanted to kind of close on a high note after discussing a lot of distressing news. Get out and look at the harvest moon. Mike Mendenhall, Giorgio Valentino, and Fred Matthews. Let's hope for no bad luck today either on this Friday the 13th.
Indeed.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Thank
Thanks
you.
For being with us. Here's a little Neil Young to commemorate the harvest moon as we go to break. Up next, the Blue Fire Theater comes to Nassau County. That's coming up.
We know where the music's playing. Let's go out and feel the night. Because I'm still in love with you, I wanna see you dance again. Because I'm still in love.
Wayne Hogan of the Terrell Hogan Law Firm.
I'm Wayne Hogan. Our most basic instinct is to protect our families. Safety belts and properly installed child seats do that. They prevent injuries and deaths.
Learn more at waynehogan.law.
The First Coast Free Thought Society presents Intuition and Evidence, How to Rely on Intuition Without Being Irrational, by Dr. Scott Kimbrough, JU Philosophy Professor, September 16th, 6:30 p.m. at the Buckman Bridge Unitarian Church. More at firstcoastfreethoughtsociety.org.
Both founding members of the Lumineers describe family experiences with addiction.
It just ravages the people that are afflicted with it, and then the family around it. It's a very destructive disease.
How to make that trauma into music. Also, the sounds of the Democratic presidential debate on the next morning edition from NPR News. Tomorrow morning, starting at 5 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
What do Renaissance paintings, the gardens of Versailles, and Washington, D.C. all have in common? They've all been designed with geometry in mind. I'm Ira Flatow. This week on Science Friday, how this ancient field of mathematics, invented by the Greeks, shaped our modern world. That's on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
This afternoon at 3 here on 89.9 WJCT.
Is it safe to vape?
We have to find out the extent of the problem. It's so new, but people are dying.
Republicans go 2 for 2 in North Carolina. The White House is in search of a new national security advisor. And is the gig up for California's growing gig economy? It's the Friday News Roundup. That's next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Finally, this hour, a brand new theater is debuting on the First Coast. Blue Fire Theater is staging its very first show in Yulee this month. Director Tony D'Amico is here now to tell us more. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. By the way, congratulations on your 10-year anniversary.
Thank you. And congratulations to you. So
thank you.
Tell us about Blue Fire Theater. What prompted it?
Well, there's a lot of infrastructure and building going on State Road 200. And there's a lot of people starting to move into that area. And it's an area that is lacking in things to do.
Arts and culture.
Arts and culture and other things to do. So we a lot of the theater that is in Nassau County is stationed on the island. And so we thought to ourselves, you know what? Let's get some of that stuff out in the west part of the county.
Sure.
In the further part, in the west part, you know, where Wildlight's going up and all of that stuff's happening.
That main drag as you come off I-95 mm-hmm. heading toward Amelia Island.
Right.
That area.
Right, right. And right now it's a little torn up and construction going on. But once that gets all done and settled, it's going to be a great road. And they have a thing going on, Timbers to Tides, from 95 to the bridge in Yulee that they've been talking about. They want to build it up. They want to make it a place that people don't just drive through. You know, they stop.
Make some destination
yes.
points.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So your theater will be one of them. Blue
yes.
Fire Theater
yes.
is mounting its first production.
Yes.
Cat on a Hot Tin Roof.
Yes, that's a big
debuting
one.
Debuting September 20th, the Tennessee Williams Classic.
Yes, we're very excited about it. Very excited. I want to say a big thank you to FSCJ because they have arranged the schedule for us. It was very hard. You know, they don't do stuff on the weekends because they're closed. They're a school. So they were able to find the time for us. Donna Martin, who's the executive director, was really instrumental in helping us get that scheduled. So we're really appreciative to them and to the folks in Yulee, the county building folks there, the extension, for allowing us a rehearsal space.
So because this will be staged on the FSCJ Nassau campus.
Yes, that's correct. And they don't have a stage there. So we've had to build a stage. We're
you
bringing
built
it
a
in.
Stage.
Yeah, you know, my friend Lee Hamby, who is one mm-hmm. of the founders of the Five and Dime, we were very impressed and we really loved what they did at first because they were vagabond. So we said, you know what? We think we can do that too. And so we're probably going to be vagabonds for a few years. Trying
until
to find
you
a space.
Get your own
yes.
performance space.
Yes, yes.
But that's just proof that you can do theater almost anywhere.
Right, right. And we're going to do a variety of things. So we're going to move around a little bit up there in Nassau County. But Cat on a Hot Tin Roof is one we wanted to start with because of the playwright, one of America's greatest playwrights. It has such a depth of themes. There's love, there's family, there's death, there's unrequited love. There's jealousy, and the ultimate one is mendacity, which is untruthfulness. You know,
yes.
it's just people not being truthful, and that happens, and it happens in families. But it's a remarkable piece of theater. It's a tough piece of theater, but I have got a cast that can do it. I am so proud of this cast because they are our first cast mm-hmm. and we're all going through this together and they are just standing beside us and they are going to put on a fantastic show.
And this is starting September 20th.
Yes.
And as you said, Tony, this is just one more indication of how fast Nassau County is growing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there's another program in Nassau County for kids. It's called Arts Alive. And it goes into the schools because they don't have like a permanent home either. So, but it's been there for the kids for a while, and they're doing remarkable work as well. But it is growing. They're wanting things to do, and we want to bring stuff for them to do.
Okay. So with all of that said, mark your calendar for the week of September 20th through mm-hmm. the 29th for the debut of Cat on a Hot Tin Roof at the brand new Blue Fire Theater mm-hmm. in Nassau County. Yes. The show stages at the FSCJ Nassau campus. Go to the new website, bluefiretheater.org.
Right.
This is the first show, but many more to come.
Yes. And the thing about it too, Melissa, is what I want to tell everybody is we need help too. We are starting to bank volunteers. We need people to come and help us set things up. Props, ushers, you know, ticket, box office, mm-hmm. backstage, more actors. We need it all. So if you feel like you want to get out there and volunteer for something fun and you want to give some time, and we are not for profit, by the way. We are 501c3.
Donations and are always welcome, too.
Any That's donations right. are tax deductible.
Yeah, so go to, you heard it here first. Go to bluefiretheater.org as a new theater comes to fast-growing Nassau County.
Yes.
Tony D'Amico of Blue Fire Theater, always good to see you.
You Break too, a Melissa. Leg Thank at the you first so show. Much. We appreciate it so much. Thank you.
Thank you. That's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Michelle Corum is our director. Jessica Palumbo is station news director. And Bill Bortsfield is our digital editor. Keep listening today at noon for the Florida Roundup, a full hour on the growth of the charter school movement in Florida. That's on the radio today at noon. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect. Thanks for being with us. Enjoy that harvest moon tonight. Have a great weekend, and let's hope for light effects from Tropical Storm Umberto. See you Monday.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.